Good evening and welcome to Outbeat Now. I'm Greg Moralia. Jeff Basham is off tonight. Outbeat Now is a public affairs program for and about the LGBT community here in the North Bay and beyond. And we're one of the four monthly Outbeat radio programs you can hear every Sunday night at 8 p.m. only on KRCB Radio. Well, this coming Friday, the United States Supreme Court will meet to discuss whether or not they will hear the appeal of the Ninth Circuit Court's decision about Proposition 8, as well as the four appeal court decisions striking down aspects of the Federal Defense of Marriage Act. No matter what the Supreme Court decides, the debate about marriage equality remains contentious, highly emotional, and hotly contested by the religious right. A few months back, columnist and the creator of the It Gets Better project, Dan Savage, sat down for dinner with Brian Brown, the president of the National Organization for Marriage, to discuss the conflicting issues of religion and marriage. And we'll share some of those conversations with you during the first half of our show. And then on the Outbeat You segment, singer-songwriter Jason Phillips, who's a student at UC Davis, joins us live here in the studio to share his story and his song. All of that is coming up next, right after your Outbeat Radio news for this Sunday, November 25th, 2012. Last Thursday was the 14th annual International Transgender Day of Remembrance, a day when we remember those who have been victims of anti-transgender violence. The event was started to honor Rita Hester, who was murdered on November 28, 1998. Hester's death launched the Remembering Our Dead web project in 1998 and a San Francisco candlelight vigil in 1999. The trans community has historically always existed in the shadows of the queer community, yet transgender people have been at the forefront of our fight for equality. While many people recognize the Stonewall Riots of 1969 as being the start of the gay rights movement, a lesser-known uprising occurred in 1966, right here in the Bay Area, and the trans community was there. Here's Ireland's radio station RTE Lyric with the story.
Today, on International Trans Day of Remembrance for Victims of Transphobia, Culturefile travels to 1960s San Francisco to uncover the story of a small but significant riot, a rising often eclipsed in LGBT culture by the more famous but later Stonewall Riot. Regan Hutchins picks his way through the Bay Area fog to tell the story of the Compton Cafeteria Riot.
Turk Street and Jones, in the heart of San Francisco's Tenderloin, is an overgrown wasteland of car parks, burnt-out restaurants, and cheap residential hotels. But when I meet Felicia Elizondo there to hear the story of the Compton Cafeteria Riot, she brings me back to the 1960s, when the vast area at the center of the city was hopping with nightlife.
The Ram's Head, the Deja Vu, around the corner was the 181.
I was born Felipe Alvarado Elizondo on July 23, 1946, in San Angelo, Texas.
The landmark, the Dolls, down further was...
I think I was around 3 or 4 years old, maybe 5, when I found out that I was different.
Ginger's, the hot spot on 6th Street. So this was the gay mecca of San Francisco at the beginning of the 60s.
A lot of my friends came to San Francisco and became hair fairies. Hair fairies were queens that redded their hair, put a little bit of makeup, wore angora sweaters, skin-tight pants, and tennis shoes. And that's as far as we could go to being as close a female as we could possibly get.
The Tenderloin had a very lively nightlife as a working-class vice district.
This is Gerard Koskovich of the GLBT History Museum in the Castro.
So it had a very considerable number of gay and trans bars, but it also had liquor stores and low dives frequented by straight people looking for trouble.
Well, in the daytime, it was nice because it was very open and we could, you know, run into people and say hi. At nighttime, it was business.
The riot took place in 1966, but how does Felicia remember it, and how does history?
It was around in the summer.
It was August 1966, a hot summer night.
What actually happened? I know it happened. I was there, but it's like a like a traumatic thing that you just don't want to remember, forgot.
The police at that time were routinely harassing and arresting gay kids and transgender women on the streets of the Tenderloin neighborhood.
I guess we got tired of being harassed, being thrown in jail for nothing, being taken off the street for nothing, being humiliated at the jail with all those men when we had to take our clothes off and they knew that we were men. And the police laughed at us. And just, I guess the girls got tired and they decided, hey, it's time to do something about it.
Area 41, can I get the pine crust breakfast with the
special or the omelet?
The special.
So here it was an all-night, a 24-hour cafeteria, part of a local chain called Gene Compton's Cafeterias. At some point, the management got tired of the gay kids and trans women hanging out all night and not mind very much, and started trying to move them along. And this ultimately led to a dispute.
Almost being 50 years ago, and being a senior that forgets a lot. Yeah, I don't know.
The stories that are told is that one of the queens who really was tired of it threw a boiling hot cup of coffee, and that launched the riot.
That wasn't me. I wish I would have been brave enough, but no. A lot of people think it was me, but no, it's not me. It's because I'm the only survivor that I know that went through it, and nobody... You know, I've looked for the girls that were in the same era with me to see if anybody really remembers what we went through.
There are no stories of real violence against people, but it did result in broken windows at the cafeteria and broken crockery. A news kiosk on the corner was lit on fire.
I don't remember. I wish I could. I wish I could go back and remember everything that happened, but, you know... We were young and little young, and how can one being traumatized by knowing who we are, being traumatized by taking us to jail, but being traumatized by inflicting a riot, it was just too much for a lot of people, and we just decided it was nothing.
But whatever happened, and whoever can remember it, the story is now set in stone. Beneath our feet on Turk Street and Jones, there's a commemorative slab, which Felicia reads.
Gene Compton's Cafeteria Riot, 1966. Here marks the site of the Gene Compton's Cafeteria. Now I can tell the story. Now I can remind everybody that, yes, we were transgender hair fairies queens. We made a difference, hopefully. We want the T in the LGBT no longer to be silent. Are dedicating this plaque to these heroes of our civil rights movement, dedicated June 22nd, 2006.
And here in Sonoma County, Dining Out for Life will take place this coming Thursday, November 29th, at 85 Sonoma County restaurants ranging from Sonoma to Bodega Bay, from Petaluma to Healdsburg, and many cities in between. Restaurants have committed to donate 25 or 50% of their day's sales to Food for Thought, Sonoma County AIDS Food Bank, for that day. Dining Out for Life began over 21 years ago in Philadelphia as a way of raising funds for an AIDS service organization, while honoring the many people who worked in the food and beverage industry that died of AIDS in the early stages of the epidemic. The program has grown and is successful in 70 other cities in the United States and Canada. Dining Out for Life raises more than $4 million a year for HIV/AIDS charities. In Northern California, San Francisco, and Silicon Valley also participate in Dining Out for Life. Director Ron Karp, Food for Thought executive, said, "On this one day, we hope to raise over $130,000, nearly 10% of our agency's annual budget. Dining Out for Life is our most important annual fundraising event. More than 5,000 people went out to eat in support of our agency in 2011 when we had 80 restaurants participate. This year promises to be even bigger." Additionally, diners will have a chance to win spectacular prizes, including 2 Virgin Airlines tickets, a Wild Wine Country weekend, or a basket of trinkets and treasures from Food for Thought Antiques by entering the exclusive drawing. Another big draw is a chance for patrons to save all year at local hotspots. The concept is simple. Anyone who donates $25 or more in their raffle envelope will receive a 20% discount coupon good for the entire table on any Tuesday night through 2013. A key element to Dining Out for Life is that each restaurant is assigned at least one ambassador, a volunteer who helps fill the restaurant with friends and family, and then speaks to patrons about the national event and the local aid service organization. This personal touch creates a win-win between the restaurant, which is typically rather slow on a late November Thursday, and Food for Thought. Food for Thought is a nonprofit grassroots agency founded in 1988, dedicated to meeting the nutritional needs of people affected by HIV/AIDS in Sonoma County. Thanks to over 600 volunteers, they provide services to 650 clients and their children free of charge. They offer weekly grocery bags of canned foods, boxed goods, fresh produce, and high-quality protein, vitamins, and nutritional supplements, and healthy snacks, along with frozen meals for those who are too ill to cook. They also deliver countywide to clients who are homebound or lack transportation. Reservations are recommended for Dining Out for Life, and Food for Thought asks people to let the restaurant know that you are in fact coming for the Dining Out for Life event. In addition to dinner, some restaurants you can eat breakfast and lunch too. To find out more about all of the restaurants participating in this year's event, go to www.diningoutforlife.com/Sonoma County. Tony and I will be at Sitai Bistro, one of our favorites, and we hope that you find your favorite restaurant to dine at as well. Now here's your calendar of events for the coming week. On Tuesday, November 27th, from 5:30 to 8 p.m., the Rainbow Cattle Company will host Give Back Tuesdays, dinner and raffle, benefiting the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. And on Thursday, November 29th, from 9 p.m. to 12 a.m., Chrome Lotus Fashion Show, Let's Get It On, presenting a prevention theme with outfits designed by students and community members. And on Saturday and Sunday, December 1st and 2nd, the Metropolitan Community Church of the Redwood Empire will host the AIDS Quilt at the Guerneville Vets Building. And also on Saturday, December 1st, Sonoma County World AIDS Day happens at the Santa Rosa J.C. Bertolini Student Center, 1800 Mendocino Avenue, starting at 5 p.m. The event will feature guest speaker Efren Carrillo and a candlelight vigil and ceremony emceed by Sister Frances Assisi of the Russian River Sisters. And finally, on Saturday, December 1st, the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus Santa Concert, benefiting Face-to-Face, Sonoma County AIDS Network, will happen at the Center for Spiritual Living, 2075 Occidental Road in Santa Rosa. Tickets are available from $25 to $35. You can learn more at www.ftf.org. For Gary Carnevale, I'm Greg Moralia. Say. This week promises to be a critical one for marriage equality, not only here in California, but for the rest of the country, as five key marriage cases will be considered for review by the United States Supreme Court. It's the day we've been waiting for since Proposition 8 passed 4 years ago this month. And many people are speculating and hoping that the court will not even hear the appeal of Prop 8, which will cause marriage equality to be restored in California, possibly by the end of this year. But the conflict with religious conservatives and institutions like the Catholic Church will continue. Recently, the very outspoken journalist and gay rights activist Dan Savage sat down for dinner with the conservative, anti-gay, and anti-marriage equality president of the National Organization for Marriage, Brian Brown. Here's a bit of their conversation.
I'm Mark Oppenheimer. I write for the New York Times. I write the Beliefs column. Who are you?
I'm Dan Savage. I write Savage Love and Run My Mouth and run myself into ditches sometimes running my mouth.
Who are you?
Brian Brown, president of the National Organization for Marriage.
Okay, so just to be clear of why we're here, back in April 2012, today's August 15th, Dan spoke at a high school, at the National High School Journalism Convention, and he said, and there's some ellipses in here, I've cut out some things, but I think I've been true to the spirit of it. He said, we can learn to ignore the bull. The original word was longer. But we can learn to ignore the bull in the Bible about gay people the same way we learn to ignore the bull in the Bible about shellfish, about slavery, about dinner, about farming, about menstruation, about virginity, about masturbation, etc. We can ignore what the Bible says about slaves because the Bible got slavery wrong. And some students walked out. The majority stayed, but a dozen or two, it seemed, walked out. I wasn't there, Brian wasn't there, but some walked out. And then in the days following, many critics attacked Dan for being, for having attacked the Bible and attacked Christianity in the presence of these high school kids. About a week later, Brian Brown wrote, was it on your blog? Because it was too long for a tweet.
Yeah, it was on the blog and I think also in an email.
It was on the blog and email to whom?
To all of our supporters.
To all your supporters. Okay.
But not to me.
But not to Dan.
Well, I don't know that I had your email at the time, but I do now.
He said, let me lay down a public challenge to Dan Savage right here and now. You want to savage the Bible, Christian morality, traditional marriage, Pope Benedict? I'm here. You name the time and place, and let's see what a big man you are with someone who can talk back. You will find out how venal and ridiculous your views of these things are if you dare to accept a challenge. Is that about right? Okay. And then later in May, again, we're talking about 3-4 months ago, in your podcast, Dan, you said, I accept that challenge. And you said, tell me where and when. You said, my living room, although we're actually in your dining room.
Did I say living room?
What did you say? Dining room? Dining room. Okay.
He said, name the time and place. I said, so, my house after dinner.
And you kindly invited me as a veteran of these culture wars to moderate. And I was grateful that Brian was willing to have me as a moderator. And your neighbor, John Colwell, a fine Seattle area chef to his four children, cooked us some fine meals. And so what we're going to do is we're going to take about an hour. And I said that since you were the one who, you challenged him to say those things, to be a big man and say those things in your presence, I'm going to let him say those things. Based on that challenge, he gets to go first. And I'm going to give him a dozen to 15 minutes or so. We're not going to be fascistic about this. To reiterate what it is that you felt, that you were trying to communicate about the Bible and about Christianity or religion more broadly and gay people.
Okay, you suggested that the title for the debate should be Christianity is Bad for LGBT America.
I said if we were doing high school debate, as I once participated and coached, the topic would be something like, be it resolved, Christianity is bad for LGBTQ Americans.
And my response to that is Christianity doesn't have to be bad for LGBTQ Americans. And I think that frame implicitly accepts the premise, the two big lies, the two big false dichotomies promoted by your side of this debate. And that is that there are gay people and there are Christians and they're at war. When the actual fact is that the overwhelming majority of LGBTQ Americans are Christians, or like me, were raised in Christian families and come from Christian faith backgrounds. Eugene Robinson and Father Michael Judge spring immediately to mind as examples of openly gay American Christians. The other big false lie, I think, false dichotomy that your side promotes is that you're either a supporter of traditional marriage, a savager of traditional marriage, or a supporter of marriage equality, when you can actually, I think, be a supporter of both. I am a rabid supporter of my siblings' traditional marriages, of my family's, of my friends, my neighbors' traditional marriages. John Colwell and his wife, Mishi Cass, who made dinner tonight, I support their traditional marriage. It's not an either-or choice. I'm from a Catholic background. My dad was a Catholic deacon. My mom was a Catholic lay minister. I attended a seminary for a couple of years, a preparatory seminary, a high school seminary. I'm not unfamiliar with the Christian Bible or the Christian tradition or the Catholic tradition. There are two, in the beginning, let's begin with the beginning of the Bible, you get two conflicting and contradictory creation narratives right off the bat. Chapter 1 of Genesis and chapter 2 of Genesis, most biblical scholars believe, are two different creation narratives that have just been piggybacked together or set side by side. Most people read them uncritically and don't notice that everything's created in a different order and for a different reason. Here is God telling you in the first three pages that you can't take these what comes next literally, because there's a contradiction here, and a massive one. The contradictions continue. Thou shalt not kill. The Israelites spend a whole lot of time killing people on God's orders. Jesus says the old law must be followed. Paul contradicts him. The one place, and this is what I said that was so controversial at the journalism conference, where there isn't really a conflict in the Bible is slavery. Leviticus 25:44-46, as for your male and female slaves whom you may have, you may buy male and female slaves from the nations that are around you. They may be your property. You may bequeath them to your sons after you to inherit as a possession forever. In the New Testament, Timothy, let all who are under the yoke of slavery regard their masters as worthy of all honor, so that the name of God and the teaching may not be defamed. If anyone teaches otherwise and does not agree with the sound words of our Lord Jesus Christ and the teaching which accords with godliness, he is puffed up with conceit. He knows nothing. This is a verse that was thrown in the face of American abolitionists before and during the Civil War. The Reverend Richard Fuller, president of the Southern Baptist Convention, in the years before the Civil War, was able to say, with a straight face, and because it's true, what God has sanctioned in the Old Testament and permitted in the New cannot be a sin. Like I said to the high school journalism student, Sam Harris, in his book Letter to a Christian Nation, says the Bible got the easiest moral question that humanity has ever faced wrong, and that was slavery. And my add-on, my point, was the Bible, if it got something as easy and obvious as slavery wrong, what are the odds that the Bible got something as complicated as human sexuality wrong? I put those odds at about 100%. Pat Robertson was recently asked about this. I don't know if you saw that clip on his show. He was asked, if America was founded as a Christian nation, why do we allow slavery? And his answer was, like it or not, if you read the Bible, in the Old Testament, slavery is permitted. That's a half-truth. In both Testaments, slavery is permitted and sanctioned. But then Robertson said something uncharacteristically profound. We have moved in our conception of the value of human beings until we realized that slavery was terribly wrong. And so what he's saying there is not just that we realized slavery was terribly wrong, also that we realized the Bible was wrong about slavery. I don't think LGBT Americans are asking American Christians to do anything that you haven't already done. Move in your conception of the value of human beings. In this instance, human beings who happen to be gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgendered. Many American Christians, we know you can move because many American Christians have already moved in their value of the conception of human beings, because many American Christians, including a majority of American Catholics, support marriage rights for rights for same-sex couples, not a majority for marriage, but a majority for either civil unions, all incidents of marriage, and or marriage. I don't think support for our full civil equality requires fundamentalist or evangelical Christians or Catholics or anyone else to change their theology, to change their perspective on the morality of what it means to be gay, just to sign off on our full civil equality. Tolerate doesn't mean celebrate. Tolerate means endure or put up with. And I think that Christians, conservative Christians, can learn to tolerate legal, civil same-sex marriage the way they've learned to tolerate legal divorce, which violates Catholic teaching, interfaith marriages, and non-religious marriages. You know, John Shore, who's a Christian blogger, a pro-gay marriage Christian blogger and author, he says that the Bible has no place in a conversation about the legality or illegality of gay marriage. Illegal is not a religious term. In a pluralistic society, you know, people are free to live their religious values. And I believe people are free to proselytize. If somebody wants to talk me out of my marriage to Terry, I think that they should knock themselves out. I don't think that they have a right to use the law to do that, to deny us equal protection under the law because of their interpretation of the Bible or their interpretation of God's will. Imposing your interpretation of the Bible on someone else is not religious freedom as you've attempted to redefine it. That is religious tyranny.
My turn.
Your turn.
Well, I don't know where to begin. I will begin by thanking Dan for opening up his house and having me. It was a great dinner earlier, and it was kind of you to have me in your home. You said you don't regularly do this in your home. I can't imagine why not, but actually I can. I mean, it's obviously having cameras here and everything else, so thank you. You've been a very gracious host.
And we appreciate you accepting the invitation.
Yeah, I was glad to do it. As I said, you know, this is an argument about public policy and about ideas. This is not an argument about us trying to hurt individuals, and hopefully on your side, folks not trying to hurt us. Unfortunately, often that is what it has descended to. Today, we know there was a shooting at the Family Research Council. In my view, attempts to label the Family Research Council, as I think Dan just laid out, maybe he didn't say the words, but to say that it's a hate group or hateful because it has a different opinion about homosexuality and marriage, I think is profoundly wrong. I think it eats at the core of our civil discourse. And I think much of what Dan has just said follows along these same lines. I don't know where to begin because we're all entitled to our own opinions, but we're not entitled to our own facts. And factually, you're simply wrong on a number of levels. Number one, When we talk about the Regnero study, NAM did not fund the Regnero study at all because there are the board members that are board members of NAM and the Witherspoon Institute. That's often the case. I mean, if you looked at how many Ford Foundation grants have been given out and look at the members of the Ford Foundation board and then look at other boards, to then make this giant quantum leap to say any other board that the Ford Foundation board members were a part of, they're responsible for the study, and somehow this means that there's something untoward happening, is simply false, and people know that. As far as Regneros' study, understand this. Regneros' study is the largest study of its kind ever done. The other studies that you point to here are snowball studies. What they attempt to do is to find homosexual parents, have the homosexual parents talk about the effects on their children, and they have homosexual parents find other parents that they know. This is not exactly a scientific way to conduct a study. And completely against what you said about the Shercat audit, although Shercat himself does not have kind things to say about the study, he does say that the proper procedures were generally followed. And they were. And you ask, why aren't there more studies like this? Well, take a look around. What folks are doing is trying to destroy Mark Regneros because he had the audacity to do a study in which he challenged conventional thinking. He obeyed proper scientific method, and he came to a different conclusion. And instead of then arguing about the conclusion, we actually have scholars trying to get him fired. Everyone knows that it's the case that if you stick your head up in academia or in much of elite culture and say, I believe marriage is the union of a man and a woman, or have evidence that shows that children do best with both mothers and fathers, that you are going to face a massive amount of pushback. You are going to be targeted. And again, attempts to say that our beliefs are the equivalent of hatred or bigotry, or that we are poisoning people, or we are trying to hurt people, or we are trying to kill people, as some have said on the other side. I receive emails from folks all of the time. That is unacceptable in our civil discourse. We have never said anything like that. I have always, and NAM has always, condemned violence or hatred of any kind towards anyone, on our side or your side. It has no place in this debate. But that really isn't the question, is it? The question is this idea that cultures throughout human history have shared, that marriage is the union of a man and a woman, and that this is a unique and special union, and it isn't only religion that states this, because marriage is pre-political. It isn't the state that creates marriage. And different religions of very different ideas about public morality all share this understanding of marriage. Is this very idea that there's something unique about men and women, there's something unique about marriage between men and women, that this union is important for society, important for children, it's in the best interest of children, is simply saying that now somehow hateful, somehow bigoted, somehow harmful? The fact that some people don't want to hear that, and again, I'm in your home right now, I'm stating my beliefs, I'm not doing it in a way where I'm attempting to attack you, I'm saying what as far what the truth is, and what our faith has taught, other faiths have taught, and what, frankly, people of no faith can come to through natural law. The simple idea that marriage is the union of a man and a woman. And you say, well, we don't want to change your institution. We want to be a part of it. There are two ideas on the table, and this debate and what happened to these kids in this assembly and other attempts to label our side as hateful and bigoted make clear the stakes. On one side is the idea that there's something unique and special about men and women coming together in marriage, and no other union of whatever kind is the same thing as marriage. There's something special and unique about marriage that's in the best interest of society and culture. And there's the second idea, and I hear it in what you were just saying, but it comes out more clearly in debates when I ask point blank the question to folks I'm debating with. And the idea is there is nothing morally different between men and men, women and women, and men and women united together. They're all the same. and folks that think that there is, folks like me, people, you know, largely of religious faith communities that because of their faith believe that this is the case, or people, again, who may not be because of religion believe that this is the case, that we are the equivalent of racists and bigots. This comes up time and time again, and frankly, I think it's wrong. I don't think it's based on the facts of the argument. I don't think that it furthers the argument. And I think that it does create this impasse.
And we'll be back with Jason Phillips and the Outbeat Youth segment right after this music break. Stay with us. That was Jason Phillips with his original song, Starting Over. You're listening to Outbeat Now on your public media connection, KRCB-FM Windsor, Santa Rosa. It's time now for the Outbeat Youth segment.
I'm pleased with my soul, I feel love, I am so, so alive.
Love doesn't need it,
on top of the world, and I'm so
welcome everybody to this month's edition of Outbeat Youth. I'm Greg Morelia. Outbeat Youth is a segment for and about LGBT youth here in the North Bay and beyond. We're here every month as a part of Outbeat Now. And tonight I am totally excited to have live in our studio a young man that I met on Facebook, of all places, Jason Phillips. And he is a student at UC Davis, currently studying psychology. And ever since he's a toddler, the world has been his stage. He's really taken every opportunity he can to sing and perform. He's been able to perform at various locations throughout the Bay Area on stages, and he's also created his own YouTube station to feature some of his music. So, Jason, welcome to Outbeat Youth.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Well, it's great to have you here. And you're going to perform a couple of songs a little bit later on, but first, give us a sense. Tell us a little bit about yourself and where you grew up.
Well, I grew up in the Bay Area in a very, very, very small town slash city called Castro Valley. You know, only one high school and two middle schools. So, very, very small town. And I went to school there from, you know, kindergarten all the way up until I graduated. And yeah, that's where I grew up.
Yeah, pretty much surrounded though by the Bay Area. I mean, it's not like it's an isolated little town.
Right, right. You're next to Oakland and sure. You know, Hayward. And, you know, on the other side of San Francisco, and so it's you're surrounded by madness all the time. Yeah,
definitely in the heart of the Bay Area. So you seem to be so drawn to music and performance, but what drew you to psychology?
Well, I've always had an interest in psychology. Just I find a fascination with, you know, different disorders and kind of figuring out how people work. And, you know, that was really a field of interest before I got into the whole music thing, which is, I mean, I've been singing and performing stuff for my whole life, but I haven't really done it in front of people for that long. So I didn't really do that until sophomore year of high school when I was doing a musical and stuff like that. So psychology kind of stuck as music is, you know, slowly pushing its way into my field of interest.
Sure.
Too.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, let's get back to your music a little bit. What drew you to music? When did you start singing?
Well, like I said, I have home videos of me singing, you know, standing on the fireplace singing in front of my family. But in terms of in front of people, I did my first musical when I was young, and I thought it was good. Looking back at that, I wasn't really good. I've definitely gotten better since eighth grade, but that's kind of when I started singing out loud. You know, I was always a little scared to sing in front of other people. I was friends with a lot of people in high school that were in choir and did musical theater. I didn't know how I was in terms of talent compared to them, but throughout high school, I would get more and more confident as I felt my voice getting stronger and, you know, more experienced. And then by junior, senior year of high school, end of sophomore year is when I started singing out loud all the time, you know, in class, in the hallways. And so I would say middle of high school is when I really started doing it live, you know, out loud in front of people, not just in my bedroom. So
now, did you get any professional training ever, or is it all self-taught?
I play piano and a guitar and a few other instruments, which are self-taught. That's just me fiddling, you know, with instruments in my bedroom or watching videos on YouTube. I had voice lessons. I was doing a musical and I was playing the lead character, and I required a lot of work. So I went to a voice teacher that's in my area, Matthew Leibowitz, and he was giving me voice lessons on the side of my rehearsals to learn the music better and that kind of thing. And then after the musical was over, after the run was finished and the show closed, I started, you know, taking more voice lessons. So I've taken voice lessons in the past few though. Now that I'm in college, now I'm just kind of on my own.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you've certainly got a wide variety of music on your YouTube channel, and you've brought a couple of songs to do for us tonight. So
yes,
let's hear one of them. The first one that you're going to do is Jason Mraz's I'm Yours.
All righty. Well, you done me and you bet I felt it. Tried to be chill, you're so hot that I melted. I fell right through the cracks, and now I'm trying to get back. Before the cool done run out, I'd be giving it my bestest. Nothing gonna stop me but divine intervention. Reckon it's again my turn to win some or learn some. But I won't hesitate no more. No more, it cannot wait. I'm yours. Open up your mind and see like me. Open up your plans and you're free. Look into your heart and you'll find a love, a love, a love, a love. Listen to the music of the more people dance and sing. We're just one big family. It's our God-forsaken right to be love, 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 love. So I won't hesitate no more, no more. It cannot wait. I'm sure there's no need to complicate. Our time is short. This is our fate. I'm yours. I've been spending way too long checking my tongue in the mirror, bending over backwards just to try to see clearer, but my breath fogged up the glass. So I drew my face and I laughed. Guess what I was saying is there ain't no better reason. Rid yourselves of vanities and just go with the season. It's what we aim to do. Our name is our virtue. I won't hesitate no more, no more. It cannot wait. I'm sure there's no need to complicate. Our time is short. This is our fate. I'm yours.
Awesome, awesome, very nice.
Thank you, thank you.
Very nice. Well, I understand you perform live at some clubs,
right?
Some venues. Tell us about that.
There's a piano bar in Sacramento, right in the middle of downtown, called Headhunters. And on Tuesday nights, and I sing for their piano bar that they have there, and it's just me with a piano player, and you know, I can sing anything from Beatles to Lady Gaga, and you know, the audience varies in terms of small crowds to, you know, a packed audience. And then on Saturdays I also perform there alongside another singer named Gail Vaughn, who's a pretty big local celebrity. And so I get to sing live all the time, practice different songs, and with an incredible piano player, Jim Jordan, who is fantastic. And it's a really, really good place to kind of sing in front of people and get feedback and sing live on a regular basis. So,
I mean, that's like a professional setting. What was that like for you the first time you got up there in front of a crowd and did that?
It was a little scary, because most of my, you know, singing is, you know, on the internet. So it was a little scary doing it in front of people, but once I realized that I was getting good feedback and, you know, I was using professional equipment, the piano player was playing alongside with me, and I learned to be fun. So, ended up losing the nerves quite quickly, and it's one of my favorite days of the week. It is my favorite day of the week now to go there. So
you're there every Tuesday night?
Every Tuesday night, yeah.
And give us the name of the venue one more time?
It's Headhunters.
Headhunters in Sacramento.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they're on the internet, so people can find the address if they want to come. What time do you typically start?
They start anywhere from 7:30 to 8 and go anywhere from, you know, 11:30 to 12, depending on how many people show up. And, yeah.
Very nice. Well, I know on your YouTube channel you have a number of covers that you've done of a whole wide range of artists, but you've also started to produce a lot of your own new original music.
Right.
Tell us about that.
Well, I've written a couple songs. There's, you know, occasionally a time where I'll be sitting and I'll be going through a thought process in my head and think to myself, oh, that's a really good idea for a song, and I'll just sit and start writing. I usually do the lyrics first, and the song that was played earlier, Starting Over, is a song that I wrote that, you know, kind of allows anyone to put their self into my position, I think, in that song. It's something that anyone can relate to about, you know, going through something and wanting to start over and you know, erasing all the bad memories. And then there's another song that I wrote called Memories, which is, you know, about good memories through a bad event, you know, something that ended poorly, which is a relationship, and Stuff like that. So I like to write songs that other people can relate to that aren't too personal, that have a personal touch, but everyone can still kind of add their own spice to and add their own reflection and memories to. So.
Right. So is there a CD that's in the works?
I mean, I thought about it. I would need to start writing a lot more music. You know, I only have 3 or 4 songs, and, you know, there'd be a lot to figure out. You know, get a professional engineer to come record for me and how to sell it and stuff like that. So I've thought about it, and I would definitely like to in the future, but right now it's not yet.
But your original songs, including the one we heard on our music break tonight, are available for download on iTunes, right?
Right, yeah.
Well, that's a great start. That's a place, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Very, very good. Well, we're going to have you do another song here in just a second, but, you know, there's a question I think that just makes sense. Your career is just beginning to blossom now. Have you ever thought about going on American Idol or The Voice?
Yes. I was actually considering doing it the next opportunity I have. A lot of the times in the last couple of years, I've thought about it and then not really kept going through with the process, and I ended up missing the auditions, or they're in a faraway city. I've really wanted to do it soon, because I think it would be a good experience, you know, to find out how I actually match with, you know, other people around the country. So I'm thinking of doing it soon. Yeah, definitely.
Which one?
I'd want to do the X Factor or America's Got Talent.
Oh, really?
Just because. I think there's more opportunities that come out of those. American Idol is kind of slowing down, I think. I don't really watch the show anymore. The Voice would be fun, too, but that's a little bit of a different dynamic that I don't really like. So probably one of those two I'd most likely audition for soon.
Simon Cowell, huh?
Yeah, I want to be friends with Simon Cowell.
Well, let's hear another song from you. This one's going to be a mashup. This is Call Me Maybe from Carly Rae Jepsen and Payphone from Maroon 5.
Right. Look to you as it fell, and now you're in my way. I trade my soul for a wish, pennies and dimes for a kiss. I wasn't looking for this, and now you're in my way. Your stare was holding, ripped jeans, skin was showing. Hot night wind was blowing, where you think you're going, baby? Hey, I just met you, and this is crazy. But here's my number, so call me maybe. It's hard to look right you, baby, but here's my number, so call me maybe. I know it's hard to remember the people we used to be. It's even not hard to picture that you're not here next to me. Say it's too late to make it, but is it too late to try? And in our time that you wasted, all of our bridges burned down, and I've wasted my nights. You've turned out the lights, and now I'm paralyzed, still stuck in that time when we called it love. But even the sun sets in paradise. I'm at a payphone trying to call, and all of my pain I spent on you. Where are the times gone, baby? It's all right. Where are the plans we made for two? If happy ever after did exist, I would still be holding you like this. All those fairy tales are full of it. One more stupid love song, I'll be sick. Turn your back on tomorrow, you forgot yesterday. Give you my love to borrow, but you just gave it away. Isn't too late to make it, but is it too late to try? And in our time that you wasted, all of our bridges far down, and I'm wasting my nights. You've turned out the lights, and now I'm paralyzed, and I'm at a payphone trying to call all of my change I spent on you. Wishing well, don't ask me, I'll never tell. I'm to you as it fell, and now you're in my way. Treat my soul for a wish, knees and dimes for a kiss. I wasn't looking for this, and now you're in my way, and I'm at a payphone trying to call, and all of my change I spend on you.
Very nice. Very nice.
Thank you very much.
And I've noticed you've got several melodies that you've done on your YouTube channel or some mashups. How do you put those songs together?
I sing a lot in the car and the radio, and you know, I'll hear a song, and then all of a sudden another song will pop into my head that, you know, kind of fits, and I'll put them together, and then I'll go home and figure out how to play it on guitar so that the two mash up, if you will. And it actually isn't as hard as people think. It's, you know, a lot of songs nowadays follow the same chords and follow the same notes, so it's not that hard, actually.
So who's your favorite artist?
I would say probably, I really, really like Maroon 5, just because I like their songs recently. In the past, definitely Jason Mraz. I listen to mainstream pop music now. Anything that's on the radio, pop music, is my favorite artist at the time. So yeah. I wouldn't have a specific answer.
Variety is the spice of life for sure. So tell us what's your vision of your future here? I mean, you've got the psychology thing working at UC Davis and this wonderful music that you're producing. Where do you want to go?
You know, people ask me that question all the time. Oh, do you want to be a professional singer? Do you want to be a doctor? What do you want to do? Right now, I don't really know. The music business, the theater business, you know, the Broadway network, it's very, very competitive. And it's hard to build up a goal in that sort of field because I know how competitive it is and I wouldn't want to fail drastically. So what will probably end up happening is I'll finish college, I'll get a degree, and I will work in that field and then probably pursue something related to music at the same time. I don't want to drop everything and just go music because there's a bigger chance to fail that way. You know, there's the whole people like say, oh, you know, follow your dream. But I also want to be realistic too. I mean, I would say I'm good, not to sound conceited, but I'm not the best in the world. And I don't think anyone would, you know, deny that. And so I think that pursuing music by itself would be risky and not very intelligent of me. So probably something related to psychology or, you know, something like that, and then do music on the side and see what happens there.
I mean, what a great hobby to have.
Something yeah.
where you can really, you know, exercise your passion, you know, and produce. And you've certainly been fruitful, as evidenced on the YouTube channel, which we'll get to in a second. But I want to take a couple minutes before we go tonight and ask you for your advice for college students. You know, we have a lot of students from all over the country that are attending a variety of colleges, some very accepting of who they are and many others who aren't very accepting of who they are. Give us your advice about college and about being out or coming out in college.
So going into college was a little scary. It was hard to, you know, think about what people are going to do. You know, am I supposed to go in there and be an open book from the beginning? Am I supposed to keep everything a secret? You know, high school was a little rough with you know, the pretty far right wing community that I lived in. So I kind of kept my mouth shut there. But going into college, yeah, there's going to be bullying everywhere you go. But going into college, I learned quickly that people are a lot more interested in people as people and not their orientation or political views and stuff like that. It's more of, you know, they're more liberal in college. They don't care. You know, I go to UC Davis, which is a very, very, very liberal school. So, but my experience there, you know, I did a musical where I played a gay character, and there's never any joking. There's never any laughing. It's just, you're there to be a part in a musical. You know, there's LGBT centers all over the place there, you know, stuff like that. And people, you learn quickly that there are people in this world that look at you as a person and not, you know, about your sexual orientation. And if you do have trouble, I mean, I volunteered at a LGBT center, the Sacramento Gay and Lesbian Center, which is very, very awesome. You know, it's one of the great resources for the LGBT community, and you know, they have their centers everywhere you are. And you know, my friend Shara Perkins is the exec director, and she's very passionate about finding youth who don't feel like they have a place to go to. And you know, she's the door is open to everyone. So everywhere you go, I feel like there's support. And I learned that quickly in college. And so I don't think there's anything to worry about in that transition from high school to college.
Great. So before we go, tell us where people can go to look at your videos and listen to your music.
You could go to iTunes and type in Jason Phillips, but the best way is to go to YouTube and either type in Jason Phillips Music or just Jason Phillips, or my YouTube channel is Acapella11.
Outstanding. And we'll have that link on our own website at outbeatyouth.com. Jason, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
It went
fun.
By so quick.
Yeah.
And remember, you can follow us all month long on MySpace, Facebook, and Twitter. And remember, you can download our past shows from iTunes and from our own website at outbeatyouth.com. And that also brings us to the end of our show for tonight. Jeff and I will be back on the fourth Sunday of December, just before Christmas, with Marsha Izumi and her transgender son, Aiden, who will be here to talk about their new book, Two Spirits, One Heart. And on the Outbeat Youth segment, you'll meet another amazing young man and activist, Connor Norton. Tune in next Sunday night for a very special edition of Living Proof with Sheridan Gold and Dr. Diana Grayer. The Outbeat Radio team will all be here to help them celebrate their anniversary. That's at 8 p.m. next Sunday night. In the meantime, have a great week, and thanks for spending your Sunday night with us. Now here's Jason Phillips with one more song, his version of Titanium.
You shout it loud, but I can hear a word you say. I'm talking loud, not saying much. I'm criticized, but all your bullets ricochet. I'm talking loud, not saying much. I'm bulletproof, nothing to lose. Fire away, fire away. Ricochet, you take your aim. Fire away, fire away. You shoot me down, but I won't fall. I am titanium. You shoot me down, but I won't fall. I am titanium.